Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Innovation fuels our economy, our society, and our own lives. Acting on innovation can be daunting, requiring significant investments of your time and money, with no guarantees of success, whether your reasons for wanting to be an innovator, you can learn from those who have gone through it. We have a seasoned innovator in the studio with us, Craig Barrow, who runs the Pleasant and Main Cafe and General Store in Housatonic, Massachusetts. But before that, he ran a number of successful restaurants and cafes in Lower Manhattan. After September 11, 2001, however, he was forced to abandon his business and start anew. It's a great story and has been a true innovator. What's your story? I mean that. What role has innovation played in your life? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us online at wamc.org/voxpop. You can do that at wamc.org/voxpop. Okay, or you can even do it at voxpop@wamc.org. We're just about out of time because I started to read the wrong page. In any case, you're all here. We want to hear from you. Craig Barrow, so nice to be here. What happened? 9/11 comes. You're running a restaurant?
9/11 happens, and like for so many people, many things in the life that we knew it ended, and things radically changed. And we just altered our perceptions of reality and looked at things in a different way. Many people at that time chose to leave New York. I had spent my career there in the Village in Lower Manhattan, and it was my community. I grew up in a small Italian community in the neighborhood, and it was an integral part of my life. So for many of us, we hunkered down and we moved closer to the World Trade Center to reestablish a community and to begin again. And for the past 12, 13 years, it's been that effort to keep the sense of family and value and to be able to run a small cafe amidst those horrific events.
So let me get this straight. You had a restaurant. Down comes the World Trade Center. It's horrifying, right?
To say the least. Mind-boggling, yes. It's forever altered my perception of the world and I think who I am as a human.
Did it close? Did it mean closing your restaurant?
It did eventually, one after another, since so much of Lower Manhattan was, you know, shut off and people weren't coming to the area. One by one, things crumbled, and instead of leaving, I made a choice to move closer and found a little cafe in the oldest hotel in New York that was built in 1844 down near the Trade Center, and reestablished a little cafe.
And then what happened?
Hurricane Sandy a couple years ago, and all of the construction and renovation of Lower Manhattan as the infrastructure for the World Trade Center just became numbing. The construction went on day after day after day and year after year. And again, when things are about done and the trade centers are ready to open, landlords see a different perception, and what was once the rent is now quadrupled. And it seemed like it was going to be a homogenization of Lower Manhattan, and I could see gradually, just minute by minute, the loss of our neighborhood.
So what'd you do?
Happening, the little bread store, you know, or sure. Joe's Dairy, where we bought our cheese, where we bought our pasta. And I said, I can't endure this. My business is about a family, and it's always been a small neighborhood business that thrives on everybody we know, and we know everybody's first name. So that's what we're up about.
So what did you do?
I was fortunate. I had friends visiting from Corsica, from the island, just my family, put it that way, people I just, you know, I love the dearest in the world, and they had seen me working nonstop. I hadn't taken a day off since 9/11. And they said, Craig, we're going to just get you out of the city.
Really?
And they drove me up to the Berkshires.
And what made them pick the Berkshires?
You know, I had kind of suggested it. I had done a little bit of fishing up here years ago, and it was this time of the year, exactly a year ago to this date. And I said, you know, let's take a look at the color. And they were just enthralled that they could actually convince me to get in the car and leave the business. I literally had been there 24 hours a day nonstop. During Sandy, for example, Alan, we were one of the only places in lower Manhattan that stayed open 24 hours a day to, you know, on a little stove outside, we were cooking food to give out when all of lower Manhattan was shut down again.
So,
and we were honored by that, but, you know, Mayor Bloomberg gave us an award.
Really?
Yeah, which we're very proud of, and I was so proud of my staff.
So you got in a car with your friends and your friend from Corsica. You drove up to the Berkshires, and then something very strange happened, right?
Yeah, incredible. I think it might be a year ago to the date, if this is 20th or 21st of October.
Yeah.
There was a little tiny for rent store, for rent sign in an old window, and there were these...
In a hamlet called Housatonic.
In a hamlet called Housatonic. An absolutely magnificent place. A town that's just truly, truly lost in time, in the most beautiful sense of the word.
No, it's lost in time. It used to be a little rougher. It had factories. The factories are mostly shut down now. And people, there were a huge Polish-speaking community. Mm-hmm. There was a Polish church not there right now. And the people who worked for the mills were all there. And there were some rough times. There were some gangs and things like that in Housatonic. I remember it well. But it's a part of Great Barrington, but it's a little bit separate from Great Barrington. And you got there, and you're driving down the street, and you saw this for rent store sign?
In an old hardware store. It was. It's on the top of a hill at the corner of Pleasant and Main, and it overlooks the water tower and a magnificent view up toward Monument Mountain, looking at Flag Rock, and the Housatonic River wends its way down through the river valley. So when I'm sitting on the front step, you can hear the whistle of the freight train as it goes through town once at night. And I said, I want to be here in a place like this someday. I grew up in a little tiny town in northern Wisconsin, 1,000 people.
How long did it take you to make the deal?
A couple minutes.
Really?
It was a month or two later.
Did you call somebody? I mean, what did you...
My friend Pascal from Corsica made a note of the little number. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I don't understand cell phones and all that stuff, but she made a note of it in her phone and had that number. And when it came time to, you know, when the lease was up for renewal near the World Trade Center in our cafe, and the circumstances were radically prohibitive regarding the increases, I said, there's no question. Pascal fished out that number and said, Craig, why don't we call this? So I called the little number, and sure enough, the space was still available. The next day, I made a trip up here. 5 minutes, I walked in the door, and it was like the spirit of the hardware store. The Snyder family owned this hardware store for 125 years.
And after that, Jack Fitzpatrick, Jack's Place, a little restaurant that was there. And before that, another restaurant. But
it had been sitting empty.
Yeah.
And what spoke to me were those empty shelves of a 125-year-old hardware store. And something just spoke to me and said, this project has to be done.
Well, look, so let me just bring everybody up to date. It's a terrific place. I mean, if you want one of the finest breakfasts or lunches or community dinners on the weekend, this has been great, and it's working out. It's working out for you, right?
It's working out very well. It's a project. We're only open 4 or 5 months now. But we've established ourselves as a local community hub where the town has absolutely received us with just the warmest way. They didn't see us as, quote, a New Yorker coming in and imposing something on the space.
No, on the contrary, it's a great place, and Roselle and I love it. But now it's your turn, everybody. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I need you on the phone. I really want you to tell me your story of innovation. Craig took something that was really extraordinary and made something out of it. Have you? 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, now offering legal help for veterans, serving the public for over 30 years. 800-342-3661. Snow Farm, studio craft workshops for adults and teens, glassblowing, woodworking, ceramics, jewelry, and much more. Simple dorms, homemade meals, and four seasons. In Williamsburg, Massachusetts, snowfarm.org. Fleury Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, offering Anderson and Earthwise replacement windows, providing a variety of sizes, shapes, and choices, along with advice and assistance. FleuryLumber.com. And Proctor is presenting the Moscow State Symphony Orchestra with cellist Joshua Roman, performing Brahms, Gounod, and more, November 13th, proctors.org for tickets.
1-800-348-2551. What's your story of innovation? Who do you know who did something that was remarkable? You know, I got to thinking about this, Craig, and thinking about WAMC because, you know, back in 1979, this radio station was gone, kaput, over, finished. It just was unthinkable. And a whole bunch of people, many of the people who are listening right now, got together and said, we're not going to put up with this. We're going to make something out of it. Well, today it's 26 radio stations. It's huge. But I will never forget how close to the line it was, when we started and all of it. And I know other people have, you know, similar stories about what they're doing. You know, I think about innovation. I think that, necessity and the mother of invention and all like that, if you have to, you do. I know you worked 24 hours a day. I know you're there 7 days a week, although it's closed on Monday. I know that even that Monday is filled to capacity. So what happens is nature abhors a vacuum. There is a space to be filled. Somebody comes along, doesn't make a success out of it. Somebody else comes along, doesn't make a success out of it. So you have to know to some degree what you're doing, but at the same time, you have to sort of have the gods on your side. I think that's part of it. The telephone number, and you're 100% sure of getting in right now, 1-800-348-2551. It is here comes one and so, and that's what'll happen. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We weren't getting any calls there because Craig's story was so good. And so Bruce, our wonderful telephone answering volunteer, didn't see the one that was blinking there. So that's it. And we want to hear from you. Once you start, there is always the issue of what does success bring, Craig? I don't want you to talk too long about this, but everybody knows that the big bugaboo for restaurants is, you got to rent it. And then you rent it for very little in the beginning, and then the rent starts to go up. That happened to you in New York, right?
Exactly correct. And that's why coming here, I wanted to take a focus where we wanted to stay very local and focus on the community, where I knew we would be the hub of the community where people would come in 365 days a year. Okay. And, they would have their breakfast and we would be local and we weren't gonna sell out just to when the tourists were here. And the ability for us to survive meant growing a lot of our own food, harvesting things, you know, be really conscious of food cost, and that we established a basis for the ability to endure when times were hard.
And you hired a lot of people from the community to work in the store, a lot of wonderful waitresses and cooks and people like that. Let's go to Roger in New Paltz. Okay, Roger, you're on.
Hi, enjoyed listening to the show, and what a lot of courage, and take my hat off to a gentleman who doesn't give up. I just was wondering, though, when he mentioned that he grew up in Lower Manhattan in the Italian neighborhood, but then a little later on he said he grew up in Wisconsin. I was trying to figure out if what he meant by that, because I thought he said I grew up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, originally I'm from Door County up in northern Wisconsin, and grew up on a farm and gathered my knowledge about food from working on a farm, and then went to the University of Wisconsin, studied agriculture and theater, of all things. So, of course, ended up being, as an actor, I came to New York 40 years ago. And when I met my environment, I was the only non-Italian kid on a block where, it was the local guys.
I thought you said you came from an Italian family.
No, he didn't say it. If you listen carefully, go back in the tape.
Sorry, I'm probably
go back in the tape. You'll hear it, Roger. But have you ever done anything innovative yourself?
No, I'm not. I lead a big orchestra, very famous orchestra.
Is that right?
Yes, very famous.
You want to name it?
You might be too young to remember. Do you ever hear of Sammy Kay?
Indeed I have. I'm 73 years old, Roger.
Well, so okay. That's what I've done for the last 24 years. I took over Sammy Kay's orchestra in 1986. He was like my father. And he died the next year, incredible story. But since then, I've traveled all over the world with the orchestra. If you want to look up Sammy Kay Orchestra, you'll see me there. But I was going to say something else. You're near Hoosick Falls, aren't you? Didn't you say Housatonic?
Housatonic is in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, in the Western Berkshires.
Yeah.
Well, everything up here is relatively close, yes.
Yeah, well, Hoosick Falls produced two of the greatest big band singers of all time, Glenn Miller's Ray Eboli.
Well,
Bob Eboli was what's his name, singer? Jimmy Dorsey. Not Jimmy Dorsey. Was it Jimmy Dorsey? Yeah. Anyway, Ray Eboli was Glenn Miller's, the big man. And Bob Eboli was the other singer from, I think it was Dorsey's orchestra. But they were from Hoosick Falls, and I was wondering if our guest today actually knew that. He could get some pictures of those guys, because they were the top guys. I mean, they had Frank Sinatra, Ray Eboli, Bob Eboli, and, all those great songs. But anyway, it was a wonderful story, and I take my hat off to you. I'm thinking of this little Italian kid running around, and then went to Wisconsin, and now I understand you graduated from school there. So you didn't get to New York until you were probably in your 20s, right?
Yeah, I think I was 20 when I arrived in New York City, and and then spent 40 years down in the West Village.
Wow.
That's a lot. Hey,
and,
Roger.
Started life over now in a small town.
Roger, I'm going to let you guys stop on that one, because there are other people who want to get on. But I thank you, Roger, and good luck with the band. That's terrific.
Yes, swing and sway with Sammy Kay.
That's
Take
right.
Care.
I remember it. Yep, bye. Let's go to Michelle in Newburgh. Michelle, you're on.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hey.
I was hearing about innovation, and I just wanted to tell a little story.
Great.
My husband and I moved from Manhattan to Newburgh, New York, to the city of Newburgh, bought a house there, fell in love with the beauty of the city and the people in it. And my husband's been in the restaurant business for about 30 years. So we saw this rather dilapidated space that spoke to us. as you were saying before, the shelves spoke to you. For us, it was the ceiling and the posts. And we rented it. And, of course, that can cause problems in the way future,
sure,
but not right now. But we went to the ReStore, which is part of Habitat, and bought different finials and pieces in it. And it's right there in the city of Newburgh, and we've had it 5 years, and it's doing quite well.
What's the name?
It's called The Warehouse, which is Wherehouse.
Oh, The Warehouse.
Because when we were in the process of putting it together, all of our friends said, "So, what are you doing? What are you doing?" And we said, "Well, we're finally going to open our own place." And they said, "Well, what's the address?" And we said, "Corner Liberty and Ann in the city of Newburgh." And they go, "Where?" Every single one said, "Where?" And so it became The Warehouse.
I love it, Michelle. And you can make a living doing it?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
And what's the specialty de la maison?
The specialty of La Maison is very simple, down-to-earth food. We have 35 different burgers.
Wow.
We have mac and cheese. We have homemade soups, fresh wings, all different kinds of flavors, and live music. And it's very much of a 60s theme.
In the way.
Posters and records.
In The Warehouse. Michelle, that's a great story. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and now on to James in Ellenville. James, you're on now.
Hey, it's Jamie Allen.
Oh, Jamie, I'm sorry.
That's okay. When you talk about innovation and we talk about food, we're trying to transform society of getting quality of food and nutrition out of the economic structure and into a social structure more, something that's all right. And one of the problems, restaurants, we talk about great restaurants, but they're pretty much inaccessible. And we don't put any value in the fact that these guys are such great craftsmen of taking the minimal amount of resources and turning it into the highest nutritional return. But, we can't use them for that way. It's not something we consider. It's got to be strictly economic. And like you talked about being driven out of business. Like, it's even worse than that, because we're such a corporate society today, and all economics are on, transactions through corporate structures. Like, restaurants can't even live the way they did. Like, it used to be 20%, pretty much, you used to report. Like, now you have to report 100%. Renewals were a basis of restaurants that landlords wanted to keep them in the community because they were part of the community. Today, renewals are, "I'm now your partner, if you're good." And I just wanted to hear your...
Hey, James, I must say, you've left me a little confused. When you say they had to report 20%, now they have to report 100%, what did you mean by that?
Well, it used to be, private, small businesses. It was pretty much, you didn't report 100% of your earnings. The cash was something you fudged. And it was, part of the structure of the whole business. It wasn't something that, it was open and started this street parking lot. It's not legal. When you put your car on the other side of the street, but it's the only way it works. Mm. And that's the way restaurants used to be.
So you're saying...
You can ask your guests about that.
So you're saying...
Today.
So you're saying that the reason restaurants fail is because of this new economic order? Is that what you're saying?
It used to be your rent was always 1 week of your month was your rent. Another week was your salaries. Today, it's 3 weeks for your rent, a half a week for the salary, and, you're not worried you're not making money because you're there 24 hours a day and you don't have a life anyway.
Okay, James, Jamie, hold on a second. Craig, what do you got? You want to react to that at all?
Yeah, the formula in the restaurant business has really altered radically. You always had your fixed cost of rent, your location, your labor cost, and your food cost. If all three of those are high, there's no way you're going to have a chance for success. If you can eliminate or modify certain of those factors, a favorable rent, a good labor cost, or really concentrating on your food cost. That's how we're doing it. For us to, people look at us and say, how can you do your community supper for $15? We have to. I have to look at the economic structure of the village I'm in and what's affordable in that town. We're not in a place where people want to be looking at $25 to $35 entrees.
Well, I don't know. Next door, Great Barrington, a lot of restaurants are $25 to $35 entrees.
But they're not accessible to us.
They're not accessible to the locals. I want
it. We should subsidize you, I believe, so that people can eat in your restaurant, because you do convert incredible value from cost to nutritional value. Nobody could do it on themselves for that, what you do. And it would mean so much for the health of our society that people could actually eat good food.
Right. Okay, but Jamie, hold on a second. Craig, I want to go back to you in this. Inevitably, I think Jamie makes an interesting point. Let's say you move into a town, you rent a space, the landlord gives you a very good deal to get the space rented, then you become successful. Well, as night follows day, sooner or later, as soon as you're making money, they're going to want more money themselves, which is why I've always said the only way to have a restaurant, and you've heard me say it, is to own the building yourself.
Own it.
Yeah. So hey, Jamie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Just wanted to get it going. Thanks.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now are 100%. 100%. So when you dream of your bucket list in this restaurant, what is it that you want to achieve? You want to be the center of the community, right? But at the same time, is there something else?
It's critical that we can create memories, that we're not, quote, a restaurant. I want people to walk into that space and that we can partake of some knowledge of our research, of the history and the architecture, the language, the characters of that particular place and time. When people walk into Pleasant and Main, I want to transport them to Housatonic, Massachusetts, perhaps 100 years ago, perhaps in the future. But I want, for that moment when they're dining with us, that they can just go outside of their world. And to me, that's what the restaurant business is creating a memory for someone. And if we can do that by being affordable, that's beautiful.
Now tell me about these community suppers on the weekend.
Community supper is just something I really wanted to do for the town. We didn't even advertise that we were opening. We put a little note up at the post office. And opening night, I didn't see any cars. I said, my God, this could be a disaster. I looked around the corner. Inside, there were 200 people.
No.
Everybody walked over from the town. We have a lot of the old, the Polish ladies and the Italians that used to work in the mills. And everybody walked over to welcome us to the village.
Oh, that's great.
You know, it was just a phenomenal. It just, we were welcomed into the town.
And you're feeding people on $15 for a price fixed meal?
Yeah, our community supper. We're doing it for the town, and we're really careful in what we buy. We grew a lot of our own food, a lot of local farmers. 90% of our produce and meats and fish are local in season.
Great. Nancy in Belchertown. Okay. Nancy in Belchertown. Everybody owns a restaurant in Belchertown, right, Nancy?
You know they're gone.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Go ahead, dear.
Yeah, but I wanted to mention what I think is an improbable success. In the town next to us is called Palmer, and some very, very fearless person took the old train station, which was abandoned when they gave up local passenger service, and stripped it down to its old beautiful self with high ceilings and polished wood and unbelievably beautiful. And they put a restaurant in there. And it's a moderately priced restaurant, the kind of place you would go more for a celebration than for, you know, every week or something. And it's very successful. And that, it, to me, is so improbable because Palmer is not a thriving town. They tried to get a casino, and that didn't happen, thankfully. But you wouldn't think a restaurant of this caliber, not offering, you know, McDonald's-type prices, would make it. But it has, and I'm just grateful that the owner-operator had the courage to go in there and invest himself so heavily and make a success of it.
Nancy, I love the call. We got to take a break, and I thank you for calling. Thanks.
No problem.
And we'll be right back. So, Mike, you stay there.
Support comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, and 24 Garden Street, Rhinebeck. Organic, local fall apples, winter squash, pumpkins, and root veggies. Natural and organic candies for Halloween recipes and for trick-or-treaters. SunflowerNatural.com. Kingsway Communities, Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including independent living apartments, home care, and more. KingswayCommunity.com. Taft Farms, Great Barrington, celebrating autumn with pick-your-own pumpkins, hayrides, corn maize, and children's hay maize, apples, bakery, and deli, hearty mums, gourds, plus locally grown, pesticide-free produce. TaftFarms.com. Mass Mocha, North Adams, presenting the show New Orleans Legends, Alan Toussaint and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, Thursday, October 23rd, massmocha.org for tickets. And Catholic Central High School, Troy, New York, a co-educational college preparatory school educating students grades 7 to 12, hosting an open house on Sunday, November 2nd at 1 p.m., cchstroy.org.
1-800-348-2551. We're talking innovation. Do you have a story of innovation that you, it doesn't have to be about a restaurant, something that you thought up, something that your friend thought up, something that your father or mother thought up that really turns out to have been a tremendous success or not? Okay, we'll go to Mike in Postenkill. 1-800-348-2551. Mike, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I just wanted to echo what one of the earlier callers had said with a little tip of the hat to Craig there for taking that that leap of faith and starting up something new in a brand new place. I was working as an information systems manager for 20 years for educational institutions and nonprofits, and I just started up right around the same time Craig did with my own business locally doing consulting for small businesses and nonprofits specifically. And I don't know, Craig, if you had experienced that whole sort of looking out over the cavern and taking the jump anyways kind of feeling, but I know I certainly experienced
that. Yeah, 100%, Mike.
Yeah. but
how did it work out for you, Mike?
Well, I'll tell you, I am busy all the time. I guess my banker will tell me at the end of the year how it's actually turning out, but, you know, I'll tell you something. You know, I was out the other day working on a farm, and I'm out there with my laptop checking, you know, wireless signal, and I look over my shoulder, and a cow's watching what I'm doing. And you know, you can't get those kinds of experiences if you're just kind of staying in the same groove. So,
but there's something also about working for yourself, isn't there?
Oh, you know, absolutely. You know, and being able to kind of provide service, you know, in a way that makes you feel fulfilled at the end of the day, there's nothing to compare to that.
Hey, Mike, thanks for the call.
It's
appreciate
a great
it
comment, Mike.
Hey,
thank you.
Yep, bye-bye. Okay, and we'll go to Bill in Schenectady. Hi, Bill.
Bill, how are you, Alan? This is Bill.
Gotcha.
Just wondering what you're going to think about the election. I know you're a Democrat, and that's about it all.
I voted for lots of Republicans, and it so happens I'm...
You did?
Oh, yeah. And it so happens I'm an unenrolled voter, which we can do in Massachusetts, which means...
Yeah, that's true.
Which means you're not a Democrat or a Republican. You take a ballot in either one of the primaries. That's something, by the way, Bill, you can't do in New York. But I got to be honest with you. That's not what we're talking about today, so I'll see you. Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And, Craig, there is that moment of faith when you just sort of say, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm not sure we can do it, but I'm going to try it anyway. And that is faith, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Chekhov, you know. It's the seagull. It's the ability to endure. As long as, you know, you have a focus on who you are and you keep that humility, like Mike just said, at the end of the day, a cow watching him in the pasture. At the end of my day, I'm sitting by a wood fire with wood smoke and watercress looking up in the mountain. And I realize that, like Henry David Thoreau would have said, you know, beware of all enterprises that require new clothing. As long as we stick to the core of who we are and what we're doing, we're going to be okay.
Yep, I agree with you. Let's go to, I guess it's Jeanette in Montgomery. All right, Jeanette in Montgomery, you're on.
Is that hello.
Hello.
Hello, Alan. And to the guests, congratulations on setting up. I have a story of my own, but I'm also curious about how he became a community hub. I set up 32 years ago. My church got a $15,000 grant from the diocese to set up an emergency housing shelter. And my priest called me in his office and asked me to be in charge of setting up a shelter. I only had a high school education. I had just left a very bad, battering marriage. Only high school, no college, also just starting to go to college. After I told him many times that I had no idea of how to do it and that he shouldn't put his faith in me, he said, okay, and he gave me the check and said, your first thing you do is go across the street, open up a bank account, and then go talk to this person. And that was 32 years ago, and the shelter is still housing homeless families and individuals.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you didn't have the faith in yourself, but he did, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wasn't my idea.
Yeah.
And I absolutely knew that I could not do it. Obviously, in my life, I had been very convinced that I really couldn't do much of anything. But a lot of people helped me. Some things worked out just because I didn't know that it shouldn't.
Well, you know, I get that. I get that perfectly. That's exactly what happened at WAMC. You know, everybody got involved. You know, I got to tell you, for the first several years, I didn't get any salary. People didn't. People just did what they had to do, and that is such a good point. As I said before, nature abhors a vacuum, and you know, if it's there and if people want it, they'll do something to help with it. It's great.
That's right. I didn't get paid in the beginning, and then when it came time to start paying staff after we got a contract with the county social services to house people, I decided that the first position that needed to be paid was not the executive director. It was another position. But gradually, everything now is a fully paid staff, but it started with all volunteers, including all of the policies, job descriptions, rules. The way, quote unquote, I did it was I got a group of people together and said, look, we need some house rules. We need this. We need that. And I set them at it.
That's
well,
great.
That makes you great.
That's great.
Okay, Jeanette, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much.
It's like it
no,
is.
Thank
at,
you.
Same thing at the restaurant, Alan. She asked about how did we become a community hub?
Yep.
By being there for the local population, you know, doing their recipes.
And you did say that from the very beginning. You did. Okay, let's go to Matthew in Pittsfield, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now are terrific. Okay, Matthew, you're on. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hello?
Hello, Matthew.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling because I was listening to your show and I thought my story was relevant. I just opened up a cafe in Great Barrington.
Oh, where is it?
On Main Street, in the Barrington House, next to the Triplex Movie Theater.
Yeah, I know it well. Sure, that's where I live.
Come to you sometime.
I will.
We have an all 100% gluten free cafe, and we opened it out of necessity because my wife, who has celiac disease, you know, we would go out to dinner, and her options were limited, or sometimes, unfortunately, the people weren't as acutely aware of what actually gluten is and what to avoid and so on and so forth. So So now we have a cafe where we have a full menu where we bake all our own breads and baked goods, as well as a full service menu with sandwiches and
Was it tough to get it going? In other words, was there a leap of faith in your case too?
Tremendous leap of faith. We didn't have any of the traditional financial backing. We did it all our own credit cards.
Yeah. And you know,
and family help.
And then, you know, the story you're in, of course, has not always been successful as a restaurant.
That is the story that we keep getting told over and over and over again. That is the running theme.
Don't listen to it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to it.
Yeah. If you're good, you're good. Hey, again, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it a lot. Okay. Let's go to David in Plattsburgh. David, you're on.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Entrepreneurship. My wife and I took a closed 1932 built school, old brick school, that was closed for 15 years, and we converted it into a fitness center, a very successful fitness center. And talking about Hub... Luckily, the fitness center was in Dannemora, New York, and it's well known for security prison, unfortunately, but the gym became a hub because many of the people who attended and joined our fitness center, they went to school there. They went to school in that building, so they were curious to see what was there, and they would come in, look around, and join. And, you know, many days I would have to walk around and remind people they're there to exercise, not there to talk about the old days. But, and I know you're an educator. My wife taught for 36 years. I taught for 33 years. So being in an old school just seems serendipitous. And
it spoke to you.
It did. Not to me so much as my wife, because... the owner of the building, in the gymnasium part of the building, he had a small bicycle shop. So one day she took her bike over to have some work done, and she said, "What are you doing in this building?" It was closed in 1988, and this is 2002. And he said, "Well, I'm making it into apartments." And as she walked through with them, which she didn't want to take her through, but as my wife is quite insistent, the place was a wreck, like a bomb hit it. You know, ceilings down, you know, plaster, broken glass, insulation, you name it. Every room was just full of debris.
Are you a renter, David, or an owner?
A renter.
Uh-huh. And so it worked out. That's a great story. And did they ever build the apartments?
No, because we took the whole school.
Wow.
We took the whole school. We had six rooms upstairs. We had four rooms downstairs. And the owner couldn't have been more generous with his rent, and also he did all the construction for us.
And did you ever make an offer on the building?
No, because the building is very special to the owner. He went to school there, and he was the head maintenance person in that school when it closed.
Wow.
He had to close it, so he bought it because he saw it just falling down. So that's another entrepreneur story. He just couldn't stand to see the building, you know, becoming rubble. And there aren't many 1932 old high schools around anymore.
Nope.
They've been torn down. They've fallen down. But this one is going strong. Now, my wife and I, we sold the fitness center several years ago. We opened it in our mid-50s, which I'm thinking, well, again, my wife's insistent. And she came home and said, "David, we're going to open a gym." I said, "That's nice. Where?" And she told me. I went over. I thought, it'll be years before this building is ready. Well, the owner got it ready quicker, and sure enough, and as I think your guest said, on the first day of business, here we are in our nice shirts. And the name of the gym, we called it Hometown Fitness. So it's not, you know, Musclehead Fitness, whatever. It was Hometown Fitness. And we had our shirts. We stood there. It was time to open, and By golly, people began coming in and joining. So,
well, David from Plattsburgh, that's a great story, and I really appreciate Plattsburgh calling in. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Right. Let's go to Carol Ann in Glens Falls. Carol Ann, you're on.
Hello there. How are you today?
We're good, and we're running out of time, so make your peace.
Well, I'll make it brief. First of all, a very commendable effort to bring a community experience and think of, you know, the type of restaurant that you're putting in there that's going to draw people together and also be something that is affordable. I mean, the average person works hard. They deserve to be able to go out, too. And you were talking about inspiring stories about being able to build that sense of community. I've been in hospitality for a long time. I write a food column and so forth, and I moved recently from Fort Lauderdale. There is a huge problem with homelessness there, and it's very visible, obviously, the warm climate and so forth. And a girlfriend of mine had found herself, also a hospitality worker, found herself in a Costco spending like $300 on groceries for her own smaller family after having passed by a couple homeless people that were outside, not asking for anything, just, you know, sitting on a bench. And she was inspired to see, you know what, let me see how many people I could feed for $50. So she took $50, went out, made a bunch of sandwiches. Through trial and error, she ended up starting the peanut butter and jelly project. Wow. And since then, it's grown from just being able to be a community effort. She's gotten people who are in the service, like hairdressers, have volunteered their time to give a haircut. And just all the little things that people don't think about in the community, people who, you know, either can't afford anything, can't afford much, have fallen on hard times. I mean, one of the people she's helped, he's got a job now and his own apartment. He was living on the streets, 54 years old. He was an engineer. He was an educated man. Yeah. And she's done so much in the community of Fort Lauderdale, where there's a huge effort now to criminalize homelessness. And, and I think that, like, most people are just a few steps away from it, a few bad mistakes or an unfortunate circumstance away from that. So,
Carol Ann, I hate to do this to you, but we got three other people up there. I want to try to get everybody in, and it's a wonderful story, and it, you know, it just begs for replication. Thank you so much.
Thinking of the community is important, and then that gentleman is to be commended. And thanks for your time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Okay, and let's go to Dale in Oneonta. Okay, Dale, you're up.
Thank you. The only thing I will say is, it's kind of inspiring to hear the gentleman who had faith in small town America, because I think that's been missing in a lot of places. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks, Dale. Okay, and let's go to Evie in Kingston. Evie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. The story I want to tell is about my parents.
But you only have 1 minute to tell it in, so go ahead.
Okay. My dad called himself the snail at the bottom of the textile industry goldfish bowl. He was given a job when they first came to this country in a fabrics warehouse. He wanted to do better. He started buying a roll of goods here, the roll of goods there. He went to one of the mills down in South Carolina and saw that they were cutting, when they were making bedspreads, they would throw away what was on the floor. He picked up those scraps and started selling them as goods. To make a long story short, he figured out that when he was selling automobile upholstery goods, that he would hold back one roll of each type of automobile upholstery and seat cover fabric, and just hold on to it. And somehow prescient, thinking that he must have known that someday. Yep,
You do, because we're out of time, and I can't keep the program going longer than it is. But thank you so much. Appreciate it. Yeah.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
And Tom from Newport had a similar story. I'm so sorry, Tom. We're not going to be able to take it today. We are out of time. I'd also like to thank our wonderful Craig Barrow for joining us. It's pleasant in Maine, in Housatonic, Massachusetts. Go there. Support for Vox Pop comes from The Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York, featuring over 100 cheeses, cured meats, grilled cheese sandwiches, Tilldale Farm, organic beef and pork, artisan pantry items, and cheese classes, thecheesetraveler.com. Maria College, Albany, hosting an open house this Saturday at 11 a.m. with information about 2- and 4-year degrees in psychology, nursing, occupational therapy, management, paralegal, liberal arts, and more, mariacollege.edu. And East Haven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, easthaven.com for information, and the ADK Market, Keene, New York, a country store featuring natural foods, local and specialty products. fresh baked goods, artisanal beer, and everyday groceries, adkmarket.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, you can conversation continues online at wmc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.